welcome to the Islanders Central podcast of June 22nd. Today was a monumental day in the process of getting a new arena for the Islanders, and Friday begins the NHL draft. So we'll touch on those two things majorly, as well as the Gillies re-signing and the Martinik situation and some other things. So let's get started. All right, well, today we had the announcement of the plans for the arena. First of all, it's going to be $14 million per year for Nassau County. That's $420 million of the entire life of the contract, along with 11.5% of all revenues from every event that includes Islander games, concerts, convention, whatever goes on. That's every single thing that gets sold at the Coliseum, including concession stand stuff, merchandise, everything. 11.5% of that all goes towards the county. Each household is going to see an increase in property tax of less than $20 per year, which can be easily made up after 3 years. And more after that. It was a really good job by Wong and Mangano today. I was doubting them severely. I thought their PR had been awful, and they had said that they were going to release the plans in mid-June. They waited a couple extra days, but from what we see now, it's been worth it. Mangano also said that there'll be 3,000 permanent jobs and 1,000 temporary construction jobs created, and I'm sure that will go well with the unions, who will probably come out in full force to vote for this. The bond is $350 million for the Coliseum, and any overages, as we already knew, but it was hammered home, especially today, would be covered by Wong. Everything else, they're kind of just focusing on the arena right now, and as they should, everything else can come secondary, but the arena is really important, and they really did a good job today of hammering that home. Kerry mentioned on the blog that he was very disappointed that they didn't release a statistic of what would happen if the Islanders stayed with this new arena versus them leaving, and I completely agree with that. I think that was kind of a misstep. They should really show, you know, that it's logical to vote yes as compared to voting no, because you're going to be spending more money if you vote no, and that it's very important for the future of Long Island. So that was a misstep, but they've had a nice process so far. They're going to release the video later on NewYorkIslanders.com. And they said that they're going to have voter registration at the draft party, which is huge. I know that they've been doing that a lot at college campuses for political elections. So to go down that route, I think, is a very, very smart idea.
Yeah, not much to dislike today coming from the Wong and Mangano camp. Obviously, it was a little anxious moment leading up today because we were all wondering when would this plan be released. And, you know, they said the middle of June, like you said, and then it took them an extra week. But, you know, here they are, they come out today, and everything looks good. You know, I have to give them credit because I didn't expect anything like the Islanders paying Nassau County the $14 million per year. That is a huge monumental step in getting detractors away from pretty much criticizing this every step of the direction. It's a guaranteed $420 million to the county, like you said. That's... You know, you don't have to project that. That just is what it is. The only real risk coming from that is if, you know, Wong happens to default or something like that. But as far as how everything was handled today, it was handled really well. They explained everything that they needed to explain. I don't think the one thing that you didn't mention was that the demolition of the Coliseum would be included in the $350 million. I know that's something that legislator Judy Jacobs had questions about, so that was answered. You know, I think when you look at it in the aggregate, this is a good plan for Nassau County. You know, we all obviously wanted it because for the Islander standpoint, but when you look at it as a whole, Nassau County is getting $420 million guaranteed. That's huge. And we'll touch more on the RFP process of developing the rest of the land in a minute, but when you look at the whole project, I don't see any reason this can't pass. And you know, that's something that you and me were both questioning in the weeks leading up to this. So I think today was a great step. And like you said, you know, the PR machine's going to be in full force. Like you said, the voter registration is going to be at the draft party. They're holding public meetings in the town of Hempstead, the town of Oyster Bay, and the town of North Hempstead in the coming weeks. So they're going to be all over the county promoting this. I'm going to try to get to one of those to just kind of gauge what the public perception is outside of Islander Mania, other Islander forums, and also the Newsday forums, which happen to be extremely negative. So we'll take it from there. But, I mean, today, overall, this is a good start, and we'll see where the PR campaign takes us, but not much to complain about at all.
Yeah, and then we also got the news the other day that Wong would have control of the land. I don't really have a problem with this. A lot of it had to do with the surface parking versus garage parking, and it's the 77 acres around the area, right?
Yeah, the whole thing about this with the Wong owning the land, pretty much they said that everything else that gets developed there would have to go through an RFP process. That's just all appeasement. It's appeasement for the ABLI, who we all know have been extremely outspoken against this, because they weren't going to have a piece of the pie. And it's for Kate Murray and the town of Hempstead, too, because they're not going to have this lighthouse project in their backyard. It's going to be somewhat of a lighthouse light kind of project with the zoning approvals that happened yesterday. So, I mean, the surface parking versus the garage, you know what, that's short-term profit for Nassau County. They said in Newsday it's going to cost $170 million, I think, to construct a parking garage. They don't have the money to do that right now. That's for a later date. So this is the best way to go about it right now. We'll see about long-term development, but this isn't going to hinder that at all.
No, and what else was there? There was the baseball plan, whether the Atlantic League Ducks wanted to build another team there or build the stadium on Mitchell Field or versus the Mets. I think it would be a lot better long-term to have the Mets. I mean, there's always been kind of like a non-official joint venture between the Mets and the Islanders. I mean, you've had DiPietro taking batting practice with the Mets. You've had Tavares taking batting practice with the Mets. I mean, like I said, it was never official, but I think having an MLB baseball team right next to them creates a more official feeling. It creates more of a united feeling between the two teams, and I think it'll bring out a lot more Mets fans to Islander games too, because they can go see the was it going to be Triple A or Double A?
I think they assumed it would be Double A since the agreement with Binghamton ends after 2012.
Yeah, and Double A is good because from what I understand, most people in Triple A are like career minor leaguers, so right. Double A would be good to go see these big prospects. So, I don't have a problem with that. What about you?
I personally, I'm a Met fan. I would prefer the Mets AA affiliate to be in the backyard. It really is going to come down to the numbers, though. They said that the Atlantic League proposal had $200,000 extra dollars to the county in revenue sharing. It's a pretty big number, especially when we're talking about a county that's essentially bankrupt and this whole thing has to go through NYFA. Like I said, I think you're right. The economic benefits of having a major league affiliate in the backyard is huge, because it's obviously superior baseball. When stars like Steven Strasburg, for example, or Bryce Harper come to play the Mets affiliate, it's going to be completely sold out. I mean, tickets are going to go completely off the rocker. So I think the economic benefit is probably better for the Mets, but from the accounting standpoint, if they're making $200,000 guaranteed extra from the Atlantic League, they might have to go that route. The whole thing with the Atlantic League is weird, though, because the guy that owns the Ducks, and he also owns the team in Bridgeport, is going to own this Nassau County team. I don't know exactly how that works. I don't know how you could. He's also the commissioner of the league, too. So he owns three teams, and he's the commissioner. It's bizarre, but if it works out better for Nassau County, they may have to go that route, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't mind. I've been to Ducks games before. They're very fun. It would just be better to have, in my opinion, not from a financial standpoint, to have an MLB team there. It might work out better in the long run. But, again, you know, for a bankrupt county, there's not really much of a choice they have right now. So, and then again, they can also, you know, if the contract runs up and the stadium's still in good condition, another team can move in there. So,
right, well, that's the problem with minor league baseball, is that these teams, they come and go all the time. So I don't know if what the lease agreement would look like under that. But, you know, if the Mets do end up coming there, who knows how long they'll be there, and then we might be faced with an empty ballpark, and I don't think they want to deal with that. With an Atlantic League team, they're probably going to be there very long term. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that was pretty much it on the arena. Very good day overall.
Yeah, just one more thing. Obviously, we started to put this out in the Vote Yes campaign and everything, but we are in the process of compiling the list to send to the Nassau County Legislature and NYFA. Again, if you want to participate, just ask that you send your name and address to us at voteyesnyarena@gmail.com. We obviously understand that it is a touchy situation with the addresses, so even if you just feel like sending your name, you know, do that. All participation is more than welcome, so.
Definitely, and don't feel obligated either. I mean, you don't have to. It's totally not necessary, but it would help us out a lot. Again, we're saying it to the legislator and to NYFA. So, you know, to help sway them, a good solid list of names would certainly help. But again, don't feel obligated. It's completely unnecessary. But your support would be very much appreciated. So now we move on to the first, well, only really official move that the Islanders have done, which was re-signing Trevor Gillies. I know a lot of people aren't happy about it. No, a lot of people didn't want him back. I mean, the Poland Islander Mania said people overwhelmingly didn't want him back. But the contract is two-way. It's obviously going to be for the very minimum. He's going to make $500,000 in the NHL and $75,000 in the AHL, or whatever that AHL salary is. You know, he's going to be the 13th forward. He's going to only be called up for divisional games versus the Flyers, the Penguins, or, like, if we, you know, if the playoff race starts to heat up and we really get into these tough games. But last year he was on a two-way, I believe.
Yeah,
he was up for, you know, a decent amount of games. But after what happened last year, I feel like he's going to be in the AHL a lot more often, especially with people like Cizikas now in the AHL and DeHaan probably going to the AHL and Donovan in the AHL. They're going to want people there to defend them and stick up for their teammates. So, you know, we already have Haley up here who's re-signing is imminent at this point. So I think he's definitely going to spend a lot of time in the AHL, and I don't think he's really going to be a factor anyways. So the worry about him seems to have faded off a little bit since it was announced as a two-way, and I don't think we'll see much of Trevor Gillies up in the NHL.
I think it depends. I don't know exactly what their plan is. We're going to have to see what they do in free agency. If they go the route where they're going to sign another fourth-line wing who fights, then yeah, maybe he stays in the AHL more. But if not, I could see him taking up that 13th forward spot again all year. I mean, you know my thoughts on this. I've been pretty outspoken against this. I just feel like this was a move that a little bit of PR could have been taken into account here. Obviously, Gillies is, you know, other than his teammates, is not extremely well-liked around the NHL community at this point because of what he did last year during the Penguins game and then the Minnesota game after he came back from his first suspension. Gillies, you know, he's a good fighter. He's good in the room. He's obviously has good qualities, and the management likes him a lot because they're keeping him here. Like I said a couple weeks ago, I don't think that his return or his departure would have had any effect on the locker room whatsoever. But since this is a two-way contract and there is possibility with him to stay in Brickport for most of the year, adding on to the fact that, I mean, more than half, probably two-thirds of the teams in the league, especially everyone in the division, carries a goon or someone like that, it's not the end of the world. I mean, we're really talking about the 13th forward here, so to get extremely angry over it, it's kind of pointless. I'm sure the money is for NHL minimum. I don't think we know that yet.
No, the financials haven't even been released, but I'm sure after everything that happened, it's going to be the NHL minimum.
Right. So, I mean, it's
not... Haley will get the same thing. So.
Right. It's not that much as far as the cap floor is concerned. But whatever. It is what it is. It's something that at least we have in our back pocket, and I know what the response was by Penguins fans over Twitter.
Oh, well, that was entertaining.
Very entertaining. It's kind of sad how obsessed they are with a 13th forward.
It really is. I don't understand. I mean, they had the whole Barry Gillies thing that didn't really go over so well when he knocked Eric Goddard on his bottom. So, I don't know. It should be interesting, the first Penguins Islander game. I think the tensions will settle down a little bit, but I think you'll still have some of those really rabid Penguins fans, if there even are any, that'll come out and bring up the Barry Gillies thing again.
Oh, I'm sure that thing is not going to die until one of the Penguins goons knocks him out. But, I mean, it's really, what are we talking about here? We're talking about stage fighting and a goon, really, it's irrelevant. So the fact that he's back, if it makes the guys in the room happy, then whatever.
Exactly. So, all right, and then we got the news from Chris Botta that Radek Martinek, is going to explore free agency. I personally don't have a problem with this. As the Islanders team continues to grow, we really, especially since they were noted as looking at D for the number 5 pick, the Islanders need to grow, and they need to kick this rebuild into second gear really, really badly. And I like Martinek. He's one of the most likable guys on the team, probably. I mean, every single one of his interviews after the game, you can't help but love the guy. But, you know, it's one thing to have a personal relationship, and then one thing if you're not really a required part of the team anymore. You know, we need a top four D-man, and he was for a team that was a lottery team, but at this point, there needs to be improvement. I've been personally a fan of Garth going hard for Scott Hannon of Washington. I think think he would be a perfect fit, slotted next to Strite, and then we would have Amak and Hamannik on the second line, and then Tucina and Eaton on the bottom six. So, you know, and then we also have Hillen, who's an RFA, and Mono signed for another year. So we already have, you know, not including this incoming free agent who I'm almost positive that they're going to go after, you know, we don't really have much room for him, and he's getting older. This year was a total stroke of luck where he was the healthiest D-man in the entire team. For him to be able to say that should be one of the biggest accomplishments of his entire career. It's time to move on. You know, he doesn't really fit into the whole future, the kid movement and the youth process. Like, I don't see him being a big part. I wish him all the best. If for some reason we don't sign that top-tier free agent, or if we don't draft someone like Hamilton or Larson, if he drops to us for some reason, then if Martinik isn't signed at the point, I would be okay with him being brought back for a lower contract. But I think it's time that the Islanders and Martinik part ways.
I agree. I think, you know, Martinik has been a great Islander. He's been here since 2001-02. It's an incredible run to be with the same team for 10 years, especially as a depth guy at this point. So I do wish him the best, but you're right. If you look down the depth chart for next season, you have Strait, McDonald, Hamannik, Eaton, Motto, and Urchina, and then you have Jack Hillen and Ty Wishart, and, you know, Gervais and RFA, you won't be back, but whatever. And then you have guys like DeHaan and Donovan and Ness and Clementiev and Kadek in the AHL. You're stacked on D. So if you're going to make an upgrade, it has to be an upgrade that's, so to speak, worthwhile. It's got to be a top four guy. And, you know, Martinik's big thing has always been his durability. And you can't trust the guy to stay healthy for 65 games every year. This, like you said, this year is kind of an aberration. So I have to agree with them moving on. As far as a guy like Scott Hannon, like you said, I don't know. I didn't really watch too much of Washington this past year, so I don't know if he's still the same player that he was. But someone in his prime, in that mold, would be absolutely perfect for that team. Obviously, the name that comes to mind in that kind of mold, a little more offensive prowess, is Kevin Bieksa, who, you know, we could talk about next week when we do the free agency show. But I think that's definitely the right track. We need a top four guy that can play along with Strait and will be here for like 3 years, like transitional period between, you know, the team as not a doormat but a lottery team to a playoff contender. And the name that comes to mind for me is Eric Brewer. But he's said to be pretty close to a contract with the Lightning. So someone in that mold. And I do like the fact that they are keeping the door open. If the Islanders do happen to strike out on July 1st, then they can reevaluate. And they can bring Martinik back on a one-year contract. But, you know, like you said, he's 35. It's time to move on. And hopefully the Islanders make an improvement there because, you know, you're 27th in the league in goals against. There's something wrong on D, and having Mike Motto as an everyday defenseman isn't going to cut it, especially if they're going to try to make the playoffs next year.
Exactly. Motto was fine as a seventh man, but they just need to improve the team. And, you know, it doesn't even necessarily have to be in the first round. I mean, look at Hamannik and Amak. They both came after the first round. Hamannik was in the second round. I think Amak was in
sixth round.
There you go. So, you know, defense doesn't necessarily need to come from the first round. And if they draft someone like Couturier, then that's fine. But the overall movement is improvement. Amak aging another year, Hamannik playing his first full year. You know, we can't have someone like Martinik who's, I don't know how healthy he's going to be. So,
But they do have to upgrade over Motto, and if that is Martinik, then so be it. But going into next season with, you know, Motto and Eaton as your third pairing isn't going to cut it. So I don't care who they upgrade the spot with. If it's Martinik, fine. If it's, you know, a higher level player, then even better. But going into next season with Mike Motto as a sixth defenseman, not going to cut it.
Yeah. All right. Well.